Hey, everybody. Welcome to the VS Code February live stream release party. I do realize that it's March, but we do call our live streams by the previous month, I guess. I don't know. I should probably clear that up with someone. Now, listen, I know that you're expecting Brian Clark today. I am sorry, Brian Clark couldn't be here, so you're going to have to rough it with me instead. But I am willing to do this if it makes you feel better. Does this make you feel better that Brian's not here? I can do this. Okay. So today we're on a new platform. We're on Learn TV, which means we only have 30 minutes to do this. And so we're going to try to keep this really tight. And I'm watching my clock really closely. A couple things before we get started. If you're not following us, subscribed on YouTube, like, subscribe on YouTube, you should do that. That's just YouTube, whack. I think /VS Code. We'd love to connect with you there. Also, we are on TikTok. I know it's crazy. I never thought I would be on TikTok, let alone VS Code would be on TikTok, but we are. What a crazy time to be alive. And we're having a blast. We're putting a lot of videos out there, and it's a lot of fun. It turns out TikTok's a great way to learn small things in a very short amount of time. So join us there. That's tiktok.com/@VS Code, or you can just search for VS Code there. You'll be able to find us there. It's a lot of fun. So join us there. And then lastly, we want you to join a meetup group that we've got to stay connected on more community events that we've got going on. We started this meetup group when we did VS Code Day and had a bunch of people sign up. And so we've just continued to post stuff there. So that's a great way to keep up to date on what's going on next and, you know, what's coming up and what's new and stay involved in that. Okay. So today we've got lots of fun stuff to do. Talk about some improvements to Git and some of the Git commands and views and GitHub integration, things like that. We're going to talk about Apple Silicon M1, right? Where are we with that? Totally different chip, new architecture. How does VS Code work there? And then lastly, we've got some UI stuff to talk about with icons and how you can adjust the activity bar icons. So we're going to go through all those, give you some in-depth demos, talk to the folks who worked on that stuff, and get some, I don't know. Well, I'll ask the hard questions for you, but make sure that you get your questions. Oh, do I dance? I mean, I can dance, but I don't think you want to see it. Okay, don't wear the hat. Okay, I don't have to wear the hat. Take it off. I didn't want to wear it anyway. All right, so with that, let's get right into it. First up, we're going to talk to Eric Amodio, who works on the Git stuff in VS Code, also the author of GitLens, for those who don't know, and is going to talk to us about some of the new Git stuff here in the latest release. What's up, Eric?
How's it going? Glad to be here.
Hi, everyone. Good, man.
All right, so there we go. So I'm going to start with a new setting called Git Open After Clone. So the clone feature has been here. So you can go in and clone from GitHub. Nice search. I noticed that Burke has a little VS Code extension. So let's clone that down. And then here you notice we get a prompt. What we want to do. Do we want to open it right now? Open it in a new window? So that setting, let me just open settings, clone. Get open, sorry. Open after clone. Why am I not finding this? All right, so we have this new setting. You can now choose whether or not you want to always open it in the current window, always open it in the new window, only when it's in a new folder, or it can be the default, which is, as you saw, the prompt. So it's nice that you can choose that. You know, I like to have it set to only when I don't have a folder open. So actually, since I didn't do that, the notification will still be here. We'll just open this project now. And so as part of that, let's say we want to make some change here to Burke's extension. But actually, as I notice here, it looks like Burke's using spaces. I really don't like spaces, so I'm going to convert those, set those, and format this code to be more to my liking. Open source maintainers love it when you do that. We all know that. But the next thing I want to show you is these, decorators. You probably noticed them, when you're editing your code for source control. So we have a new setting also that shows that. I like to use the JSON editor for my settings, but let's see, decoration. So we have these, the gutter decoration. So we used to, you could turn them on and off, but the new option now is to choose what they do. So normally, you come in here, you can hover over them and you get, you can click on them and see the actual diff of, your change. And you also, in case you didn't know, you can Alt F3 through them. But now, like if you find that you misclick on these things or you just don't want them expanding and showing, but you still like the indicator, you can now set them to none, and then you can no longer click on them. You can still use the Alt F3 to go through them, and Alt Shift F3 go backwards, so you can still go through the diff and not really lose any functionality there. All right, and then on that, let's say make some changes to another file here. Let's make a change here, and I've gone through, I've closed all my changes. So we've added a new feature now too, here that you can see, git open all changes, and it will quickly, any changes that you had open will open them in an editor. So, if you've closed down all your editors and you want to just reopen, just things that you're working on, you can quickly get to that. And then finally, wanted to show in the timeline view, just open a new folder just so we can show. Let's put them on the file here. Sorry. And so here in the timeline view, we show the history of the file. You can see all the commits that are made here. And you can always click on the individual file to get the diff between that. But one feature we did add now is so that you can click on a particular diff. You can say select this one for comparison, and then say, oh, I want to compare it to this one. Excuse me. So now you can actually see the difference between those two, any two commits. So you can, any commit in history, you can select it and see, compare your changes there. So if you're trying to see when a specific change came in, or just between sets of changes, and make sure that something didn't get lost, you can now easily do that from the timeline view. And we'll likely be enhancing this in the future to actually allow you to multi-select and do the same thing there. And that's pretty much all I have.
That was great. Thank you, Eric. Just looking at some of the comments coming in here, because there's a bunch. Let's see. Ricardo loves GitLens. He's a huge fan. He just wants you to know that, I think. So thank you, Ricardo. I'm a huge fan, too. Let's see here.
For some reason, interesting, I can't question hear about Burke.
Oh, you can't hear me? Are we good? You're good? Okay. Eric can't hear me.
I got you.
Stream can hear me. You got me now? Okay, excellent. All right, we're good. That's all right, man. Audie, this is the fun of a live stream. So we did get a question about someone asked, they want to know if they can get their GitHub profile picture in the toolbar. Is that an option?
Not currently. We have definitely thought about, even bringing in the avatars and stuff for the commits as well. But right now, you can't do that in core. If you use GitLens, you can get that feature in core. You can get that feature. So,
Eric, did you sell GitLens on the VS Code live stream?
I did. I just pimped GitLens. That's right.
All right. Look, what about what's coming next for GitHub integration in VS Code? What about that?
You know, so we're working on a bunch of different things there. You know, like the PR extension is a lot. You know, we're doing a lot of work to really smooth out that workflow for, you know, creating PRs directly from the IDE, editing, reviewing, all of that sort of stuff. So there's, you know, a lot of work that's been going into the GitHub integration there. And then, yeah, there's also some other stuff that I'm not sure I can mention yet, but it will be coming very soon. But yeah, you know, there's a bunch of stuff we're doing with GitHub on you know, getting that much smoother and integrated.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being with us, Eric. Everybody check out the new Git stuff in the latest release. And of course, GitLens as well. We'll mention that again. If you don't have that, check it out. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it, man. All right, folks, next up, we're going to talk about the new M1 chips and the status of VS Code on that new architecture. Before we do that, I want to thank the folks who use Insiders. When you use Insiders, it helps us identify problems for the people on the stable version. So the biggest thing you can do to help us as a team, we love you and we love your help, is to use Insiders because it makes features like this next one possible. So next up, we've got Alessandro, who's going to talk to us about the Apple Silicon builds of VS Code. What's up, Alessandro?
Yeah. So I have some really good news, which is that the latest release of VS Code added support for the new Mac with Apple Silicon, which are using an ARM64 chip, as you probably remember. So this means that if you have one of these new MacBooks, like for example, this one that I'm running here, that have an M1 chip, you can run VS Code natively. Before, you could obviously have run VS Code on M1, but before it was an Intel application. So when you run it on the M1, you were actually using emulation with Rosetta. So I want to start by saying that when I'm the one presenting this to you, I need to give a shout out to my teammate Deepak Mohan, who was actually the one that make all the work for making this possible. And so as a Mac user myself, like, thank you, Deepak, for everything you've done. I know there were a lot of challenges. So anyways, the good news is that VS Code on Mac ARM just works, and it's literally the very same VS Code you had before. Before we get into VS Code itself, I wanted to show you my cursor is gone. Okay. I wanted to show you about the new experience for downloading VS Code. So from the home page of the code.visualstudio.com website, you can see that the main download for Mac is now a universal build. So if you're not sure which one is the chip that your Mac is using, this one is a safe choice because it works for everyone. The downside is that the universal build is fairly large. Because VS Code uses Electron, in the universal build, we have to pack Electron twice. So you're looking at a download that is about 170 megabytes, which is quite a bit of data. So if you click on other platforms here and you scroll to the bottom of the page, you can see that under Mac, there are multiple architectures, and these are architecture-specific builds. So if you know which architecture, which kind of chip your Mac has, you can pick the right build for your architecture, and you can have a download which is a little bit like about half the size of the universal one. So for example, for my Mac, I will pick Apple Silicon because it has an M1 chip. After that, installing VS Code is the same as it was before. So thanks to VS Code now being a native app, there are some great benefits. And the first one is that VS Code is fast. Like, VS Code was fast before, but now it's really much faster. Even while we were testing Mac ARM support in the Insiders channel, users were reporting that the native VS Code would launch much faster than Intel build. And actually, people were comparing the VS Code on ARM on an M1 Mac, and they noticed that it was faster than on an Intel Mac. So I'm going to show you opening VS Code. And I know it's hard to compare because I cannot show you side by side with an Intel MacBook, but users are noticing it. And you might have noticed that it's really fast at launching as well. Aside from launching, this native VS Code on M1 Mac also feels really snappy and fast. When you start using it, you will notice that it feels like very reactive. It feels like it's working fast. And because there's no Rosetta, so there's no emulation, it also uses less battery. Aside from that, everything else works exactly as you would expect, and it is the same old VS Code. So here I have a very simple Go project, and if you've been using VS Code before, the next 30 seconds are going to be the most boring demo you've ever seen. So this is a very simple app that just shows random quotes from Taylor Swift. So it's written in Go, and I can just put, for example, a breakpoint. Let's just do it on here. And then I can start the debugger, And this literally just works, like exactly as you would expect from VS Code. And I hit the breakpoint exactly, precisely what I would expect, nothing more, nothing less, just like same old VS Code. So this is like, I would say mostly like the demo. This is it, right? It's literally VS Code, just faster, running natively on M1. Except there is one thing that I wanted to point out, which is that the machine I'm running right now, it's a great machine, I love it, but it doesn't have an ARM chip. So sometimes there are things that that might have issues. Like for example, if you're working on Node.js, you might not care a lot, but if your application depends on some native modules that you get from NPM, then that might make some differences. If you're working on other languages like C, C++, or if you have dependencies in libraries that are not available for ARM, you might have some issues. Or maybe you also just have like an app that you are going to deploy on an x86 server, and you want to avoid the existential pain that is cross-compilation for a different architecture, because seriously, I've done that, and 10 out of 10 would not recommend. Cross-compilation is awful. So this is one thing that VS Code can do, and I think it gets really cool. We have talked about remote development a lot, even in these release parties and live streams. But now that people can code on different architectures, this might be yet another situation where remote development can be useful. So you can see here, for example, that this is an ARM machine, right? UNMP shows that I'm running on ARM. So with VS Code, you can have remote development. So you can use things like remote SSH, and you can code against any server connected via SSH. If your server has an Intel CPU, then you can code in that x86 environment from your Mac that runs on an ARM CPU. Or if you use remote containers that have a Docker host on a remote server, that works as well, as long as your remote Docker host is running on Intel. Again, that allows you to get on a different architecture. There's also a third option, which is what I wanted to show you today, which is using GitHub Codespaces. You might have heard about Codespaces before. This is a development environment on the cloud, and it's fully managed. And because it runs on Intel hardware, it gives me the ability to run on the same Arc that I had before. So when you want to use Codespaces, you go to github.dev, which brings you to this page. And here you can create a Codespace from any repository on GitHub. For example, this is the repository I was showing you before. You choose the branch and you create the Codespace. That takes about a minute. So I already have one created here. I can open it in the browser, but I can also open it inside Visual Studio Code itself. And here it is. Let's just connect to this one. And you can see that I have a full VS Code experience. This is running, however, in the cloud through GitHub. So because this is, however, Codespaces, I am on an x86 platform, and I can use whatever tool, library, framework, runtime that I need, even though my machine runs on ARM. Again, everything works. I can just run the debugger, and this is running on the remote server, but I see the port forwarded locally. So this should work. And you see here a beautiful quote from Taylor Swift. So this is it, really. I hope that this helps. Also, using things like remote development Codespaces lets you still get access to x86. So if you find a bug in your application, you cannot blame it on your architecture, and you cannot say it works on me anymore. Now everyone can code in the same environment.
Oh, man, that's so great. I've been holding off buying one of the new M1 Macs because I want to make sure everything works. But speaking of everything working, what about, you know, all the myriad of extensions? How does that stuff work
now? Yeah, so that is a great question. So the majority of extensions for VS Code are written in JavaScript or TypeScript. So they are interpreted and they should work as is without issues. There are some extensions that have a dependency on native modules. And for those, the good news is that Mac is the third ARM platform VS Code supports. So we started with Windows last spring, I believe, and then we had Linux on ARM in the fall of 2020. So this is the third time. So the majority of extensions at this point should work on Mac ARM. There might be some that still have some incompatibilities. And in that case, my best recommendation would be to open an issue with the extension developer and ask them if they can update the extension as well.
Okay, awesome. So we got a couple comments here. Charles, good question, Charles. If you install the universal build, is update smart enough to only download the right build for the next version, or do you get the universal build again?
This is still something that we're going to optimize. I believe at the moment the next version will be universal, but it is something we're looking into for optimizing. You can also install VS Code from Brew. It's possible. And if when you use Homebrew, it actually that is smart enough to install the right version of VS Code for you, the right architecture, I mean.
Nice. And a couple of folks, opining their lack of access to code spaces. Ricardo, Jonathan, we know, we see you. We're working on it. Stand by. It's coming your way. Hold tight. We know everybody wants access to code spaces. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Let's see, Cyrus. Now I can buy the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Yeah. Well, I was going to go with the 14-inch, but I am waiting on the little lightning. What is the MagSafe? I want the MagSafe back.
Oh, yeah. We missed MagSafe, yes.
Right? That's the feature I'm waiting on. Not a better processor, a magnetic charging cable. Okay. Thank you, Alessandro. That was great. You. Appreciate it, man. All right. And then last, but certainly not least, product icon themes and extension guidelines. You can now change the icons in the activity bar. Here to tell us about that is Miguel. What's up, Miguel?
Hey, Beric. How's it going?
Good, man. What you got for us?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you and everybody else about our new product icon theme feature that we just announced. So if you are familiar with icon themes, so you might be thinking, don't we already have icon themes? And your answer is yes, we do have icon themes. So in the Explorer, you know, we have these icons here. You can actually go in and change file icon themes. So we've had this for a while, and a lot of people really love using the different variety of icons. But we've gotten a lot of growing requests for changing other icons. So we've kind of introduced, you know, how do you change the product icon theme? So product icon themes are all of the other icons that are not file icons, so things that you kind of see in throughout the editor. We've now added support to be able to sort of to change those. So I'm going to walk through a little example on how you go about to create that. So I'm using an example of the Feather icon library, which somebody from GitHub created, which is an open source library of icons. I want to kind of take a couple of these icons, add it in, replace the icons in the activity bar, and just kind of show you how that works. So I have these set of icons that I kind of want to replace. These are looking cool. I want to go ahead and export. So I'm just using Figma for this. You can use any tool to kind of create any of your icons that you can export to SVG. So I'm going to export these as SVG. I have a sample project that I'll share later on how you can go about creating an icon font. So I have these SVGs, I'll export these. I'll go back to VS Code. And you can see now I have all of my icons that are here. So for product icon themes, what's all that's needed? So all you need is a JSON file and a icon font. So here we have an example. We have a certain structure where you just give it the name, where your icon font lives. And then the icon definitions of what icons you want to replace. So you might be thinking like, well, how do I know what icons do I need to replace? There's two quick ways that you can do that. We have a reference on our docs that has a list of all the icons that exist. You can search for the individual icons, and we have identifiers, and we also have default IDs. So if you just wanted to replace one icon in one specific area, like just the accounts, or if you want to replace all references of the account. The other thing you can do is if you are in the tool and use the command palette with Command Shift P, you can go toggle the developer tools. They'll pop up in this little dev tools, and then you can use the inspector to figure out what the name of the icon is. So this is more the more direct way, and you'll see that they're all referencing Codeicon, which is our icon font name. So all you need to do is just grab the name that you're looking for, and that's essentially the name that you'll use. So for this example, I've already exported all the icons that I want to use. I want to just essentially replace all of these icons here. I have the icons that are ready, and I'll run my build command, which is Command Shift B, and it'll just compute all of the icons and create an actual icon font. So now it's spitted out all of the icons that I have in an icon font. So you can see here, if I were to open this as a preview, this is just the tool just generated this for me. So I'm like, all right, those icons look good. And it also generated this CSV. And so this is essentially where I get to have the name of the icon that I've created, and then the character code. So this is where, okay, I am doing the files icon. I want to copy this Unicode character here, paste it in there. And so I want to do this, essentially the same thing for the rest. So I'll go ahead and just paste the rest of these. So now I have the files icon, the search icon, source control, so all the activity bar icons. And then I'll hit F5 to go ahead and debug. And you'll notice now on the left-hand side, now my icons change. So this is sort of essentially how the process works for kind of creating a theme. So you can go in and create all sorts of different themes. You can create different styles. I'll show you a little bit of what exists currently. So I have, if you go to product icon theme, I've installed a couple already. So you can see how on the left-hand side, all the different icons that kind of change. You can kind of start to see how there's a different style for each of these. And you can go ahead and define whatever style that you want. It's kind of open to all theme authors to kind of create their own. And then I also have an icon theme that I created called the Fluent icon theme that's using this exact same project that I use. So if you wanted to go ahead and create your own theme, you can go ahead and just fork this repo, change out the icons, change out the publisher, and just publish a new theme. So that's just kind of like an example of how you go about creating icon themes and how to go through and just swapping out the icon themes to something that fits for what you want. And we have a new tag in the marketplace. So if you go and search for tag product icon theme, you can see the list of all the icon themes that are, or product icon themes that exist in the marketplace.
Nice, nice, nice. I'm a huge fan of UI, Miguel, even though you have your sidebar on the wrong side of VS Code, I won't judge you for that. Looks like you're using the GitHub Lite theme. Is that true?
Yes, GitHub Lite theme. And I'm definitely the light during the daytime, dark during the night. So I have the auto shift set up. So that's kind of what I use.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one too. A couple questions. Here's a fellow named Elijah Manor that I've never heard of. Don't know this fellow at all. Who said, would be fun to have a set of icons that would automatically update as holidays approach, like Pi Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas. Would it make me code faster? Maybe not, but I would enjoy it. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I can even imagine like a roulette of icons of trying to figure out what icons mean what and just shuffling everything around to see how productive people can get.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I do know Elijah quite well. Thank you for that question, Elijah. Let's see what else we got here. Material icon theme. Yeah, Cohen, I'm with you. That's an awesome one. So question, they're all grayscale. Is it not? Like, how do you stop me from putting, you know, just anything I want over here? How do we enforce UI guidelines here so that things look consistent?
Yeah, so on the note on the icons, everything is kind of grayscale, mostly before theming. So, you know, as you have an icon here and I change different themes, you can notice that the colors all kind of update automatically. So if we had like custom colors that were set there, you would not be able to sort of essentially theme the icon. So this is what allows us to be themable. The other thing too, in terms of like, how do you do like best practices for creating like themes and extensions? We do have a new extension guidelines link on our doc, so we'll post a link to that talks about everything about how to create an extension with the best practices, the name of the architecture of how we actually name certain things in the product, and then things from like notification etiquette to how to use certain views, do's and don'ts, best practices. So if you're looking to kind of create a new extension and don't really know what is a good guideline, check this out. It'll cover most of what you can do in the tool. And if there's anything else that's missing, feel free to reach out and we can edit it in.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Miguel. Really appreciate it. So we got a couple minutes left. I want to address a couple of things. First of all, let's answer the very hard and controversial question. There were VS Code t-shirts mentioned in VS Code Day, and they're not here. Alessandro, you get to come back on stage and tell people where the shirts are because Eric had one on. So now we have to address the question, where are the shirts? Oh, wait, I think you're still muted.
I'm sorry. This is how life is lately, right? There are aacadems.com/VS Code shirt. So S-H-I-R-T.
Nice. We'll be sending that out shortly. Get your shirt. All right. Last minute, folks. Please let us know, what can we do different on these live streams? How can we do it differently? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Connect with us on YouTube. Connect with us on TikTok. Connect with us in our meetup group. We've got all of those places. Thank you for being with us today. Enjoy the new, I think it's 1.5.4.1 release. Okay, that's the one. And maybe pick up a new Mac. Treat yourself. Thanks so much for joining us, folks. And we'll sign off. See you later.